Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this
and
Constitution,
so, my fellow Americans,
the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do.
This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
Live it is. Dave here tonight with Friday Roundtable, the Missouri Grassroots Friday Roundtable. Tonight with me, Vaughn. How you doing, Vaughn?
Fine, Dave. How are you?
I'm great. How was your week?
It's one of those weeks where I have to give myself bonus points for not punching anyone.
Yeah, okay.
I tried so hard, too, so I succeeded.
Well, yeah, I know how that goes. You're in that family law business, aren't you? So I know that can get kind of frustrating sometimes and really be banging your head against the wall. I've got a daughter who does that, so I know exactly where you're coming from. That song, don't you love that song we open with?
I do. I always do a little dance on the radio.
Dance. That's Krista Branch, by the way. That was the theme song for Herman Cain's campaign, done by Krista Branch. I don't know which came first, the theme song or Cain's campaign. She may have recorded that song and Cain just latched onto it, or I don't know that she wrote it for Herman. I don't know. She was at several Herman rallies performing the song live. That's Krista, Krista Branch, Branch. You could buy that song in its entirety for a mere 99 cents on iTunes. I've done that, and I now play it in my – in fact, it's my ringtone for anyone from Missouri Grassroots Coalition that calls me. That's my ringtone for any one of you seven, so –
Oh, cool.
It's a great...
I didn't realize she used to be on American Idol.
Yeah. She was a second-place finisher, I think, on American Idol. That's exactly right. I had forgotten that myself.
Well, cool. I'm glad she was able to move on from American Idol and do something that means a little bit more than American Idol. I haven't seen that show in years.
Exactly.
So, I don't know what I'm missing. Did they have another one?
Oh yeah, it's
Is
on.
It still on?
Yeah, it's on every season. It's huge. I mean, it draws a bigger audience than the Republican debates.
Those debates.
Because Americans know more about American Idol than they do about politics.
Yeah, but given the choices they've had, can you blame them?
Well, that's true, and let's just use that little comment as a segue into what's going to be our national minute tonight, Vaughn. You know, we've pretty much I don't know if it was you and I or you and Lisa one night who had this discussion at length about the fact that although it's not anybody in the grassroots movement's choice, nobody in who is a grassroots constitutionalist is enjoying the fact that Mitt Romney is going to be our candidate. Would you agree with that, huh?
It's kind of like being told that you have to take a double dose of castor oil.
Well, that's true. I mean, but given the alternative now, and when I had this discussion before with either you or Lisa a couple of weeks ago,
Lisa.
Okay, the discussion centered around, okay, grassroots patriots, get over it. This is our guy. We've got to back him now. I keep hearing, still yet today, much to my chagrin, the Santorum people and the Ron Paul people and even some of the Michelle Bachmann people saying, well, you know, this guy's not conservative enough for us. We're just not going to vote. Well, honest to God, now that is to elect Barack Obama for another term. So it's time for us to take the pill. And here's where we're going tonight with this. Our job now as grassroots constitutional Americans, as libertarians, as far-right conservatives, it is our job to hold Romney's feet to the fire, to keep him right. There's going to be a tendency to try to do the McCain, to try to do the McCain jive and move towards center. And what we do not need is another 4 years ago campaign where you've got two candidates standing on stage and you can't tell one from the other.
Well, I agree with you. You know, it's funny. I was at a meeting last night with my husband. He was giving a talk about guns and the Castle Doctrine, and it was actually a pretty good talk. If I do say so myself, I had nothing to do with it, so it was better than anything I'd put up there. But one of the things that came up was someone said, and a lot of people agreed, now that it's clear Romney's the guy, you have got to get behind him. It makes my tummy hurt a little bit, to be honest, to have to get behind Mitt Romney when there were true conservative candidates who might have had a shot in the primary, and they all tore themselves to pieces trying to get to the number two spot, of course. But that's the simple truth. If you don't vote, if you stay home, then you're voting for Obamacare. If you stay home, you're voting for Obamanomics. If you stay home, you're going to prove Walter E. Williams right. And, you know, Walter E. Williams is a wonderful, wonderful writer. And one of the things he said, and I think this has been more than a year or so, he called it. He said Obama's going to win re-election by a landslide because he's going to have the Hispanic vote. He's going to have the black vote. He's going to have the union vote. He's going to have the female vote. And it just went on and on and on. I think we need to get out there and prove him wrong, which he wouldn't mind at all, because if we send that message that we can send Obama home, then Mitt Romney and the entire Republican Party will realize that no one is invincible. So we got to do it. We got to get out and vote.
That's absolutely right. We got to get out and vote. And then as constitutionalists, we have to hold Romney's feet to the fire and keep him
absolutely
from drifting. Keep him from drifting away from the message that draws a clear distinction between what we believe in and what the socialist government believes in.
Absolutely. You tell him we put you in here, we can take you out.
That's right. That's right. And you know, I diverge for just a second, but I've always said that the best way we can send that message to our newly elected president is by doing what we promised we'd do 4 years ago with this House of Representatives. We need, as people who said, this is what we want, you're running as a Tea Party candidate, you toe the line, or we'll take you out as fast as we put you in. Now, we better keep our word on that, and we better replace a bunch of these Republican rhinos that we sent to Washington in this takeover and 2 years ago, and we better keep our word and replace some of these people.
These Republicans in name only. You got to get rid of Emerson.
Yep.
You got to replace her with Parker. You got to get rid of all these guys.
Yep.
It's not been good for conservatives for years now. And we are, I think, at a point now where it's put up or shut up. And we actually have a lot more influence and a lot more people out there supporting us than I think even the Democrats realize. And, you know, this coming election, this August primary, for instance, should prove my point.
Right.
So I'm excited about August.
I am too. But yeah, you're right. I mean, Emerson, Todd Akin, those are some people who've been more than the last 2 years in there that just need to be replaced and needed to be replaced last time. But I'm talking also about those guys that have only been there 2 years. Those guys, Billy Long.
Yes.
I know we can think of three or four more names, but he's my guy. And these are guys that we sent to Washington with a clear message, and within a week of getting there, they'd sold us out. And we told them when we sent them there, we'll take you out as easy as we put you in, and we need to hold the line on that.
Absolutely. We need to change these folks like we change your gym socks
until
they get the message that no one gets up there and gets to stay, that inertia just isn't going to happen anymore.
And that needs to be part and parcel of that message you were saying that we need to send to Mitt Romney. I mean, when Mitt Romney wins in November and sees all of these Tea Party sellouts going home, he's going to know we mean business when we say you stay on the right side of the line or you're going home as well.
Now, I want to play devil's advocate just a little bit here. Is there a possibility that Mitt Romney might be playing it safe until he gets into office and then lets his conservative id out?
I'm not sure he has one. I think we have to make that for him. I'm not really sure he has a conservative id. Do you think so?
You know, maybe I just didn't get enough sugar today. Maybe I had too much sugar. I don't know. But there's always a possibility. I mean, the man's a businessman. There's always a possibility that he'll take a look at something like Obamacare and say, look, there's just no money for this, and either quietly make changes or overtly just come on out and say, this is what we need to do, and it's going to be hard, and you're going to have to suck it up, but that's just how it's going to go. I remember Michael Moore called Bill Clinton the best Republican president this country's ever had.
Yep.
And I remember that. So it was something of a surprise. And even now, if you look at Obama, he's had the compromise on drilling. He's had the compromise on the Alaska Nature Reserve. He's had to make some compromises, or at least not move until he's sure that he's going to get a second term in office.
Absolutely.
So,
wasn't it like the Russian ambassador that he told to just keep a low profile until I get a second term in office, and then I'll give you the rest of the country?
Right. And then people will recall that he promised his liberal friends, if elected, I will close Guantanamo Bay within 1 year.
Oh, absolutely.
And it turns out 1 year is an Obama year.
Yep, that's right. That's about right, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that a soccer field isn't going to make up for 10 years in prison without a trial. But, you know, I think that the nature of the game is such that not even Obama can be Obama. And hopefully when we get to the point where Mitt Romney's, you know, down there in November and the results are in and he's in the Oval Office, maybe we'll see a little bit more conservatism than expected. But that's just me. I might have been smoking something I shouldn't have been smoking. I don't know.
No, I hope so. I think that Mitt Romney will just be fiscally conservative because he's a smart businessman, and that's right. But when it comes to Obamacare, I mean, I want a guy who doesn't say, we're not going to do this because there's no money for it. I want a guy who says, we're not going to do this because it's wrong.
Well, see, that's where you're going to have your problem, Dave.
Right.
Because a lot of people will tell you that it's the right thing to do if only we had the money. And that's just not the case. We're not getting the message out to those people that this isn't the right thing to do. And I don't think Mitt Romney has a well-crafted message on Obamacare.
No, I don't either. In fact, I'm convinced he doesn't. And I said, anyway, back when I was hip-deep in Herman Cain, I contended that the only way we could lose in November was if we nominated Mitt Romney, because the big issue, and it was at that time, and I take that back now because other big issues have come up, the NDAA, the Obamacare parts with the tramping all over the Catholic Church with the birth control. So other issues have come up that we can ride, but at that time, the big issue was Obamacare, and Mitt Romney just had no credibility. I mean, with his Massachusetts Romney Care, there was no credibility to go fight that fight. But now there are more fights to fight, and I'm anxious to see when this is over. You know, we keep reading in the mainstream media, even on Fox News, the poll after poll after poll, and it is getting closer now, that put Obama ahead of Romney, Obama ahead of Santorum, Obama ahead of, and I said what a person who's been watching politics for years ought to know, and that is, there's been no attack on Obama yet. I mean, that's why Obama is beating all these people. Obama has never been the center of the campaign yet. Now, when it comes down to one person against Barack Obama, those polls are going to change radically.
Yeah, I have to say, I think that the president's been ineffective.
Very.
I mean, can you point to any, and he can't why are we giving him credit for Obamacare or infamy for Obamacare? To be honest, he was along for the ride. We need to blame that on Nancy Pelosi. But to be honest, can you think of anything this president has done that has improved this nation in any way whatsoever?
Not a thing.
Maybe some caller will tell us. Maybe someone's going to call in and say, Von, you're wrong. He did this. And I'm going to have to remember what this is because I can't think of anything in 4 years that he's done.
Well,
he
played
a lot of basketball.
I hope they do call. I want to hear from them. 347-677-1835. This is the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Friday Night Roundtable. Von Carriker and myself here tonight. 347-677-1835 if you want to be on the show. So I agree with you, Vaughn. It's been totally ineffective. It's been just a nightmare. It's been a nightmare, and four more years of it, and we're finished. So we've got to A, get behind Romney, and B, we've got to hold Romney's feet to the fire and make sure that he does the right thing. So
I agree. That's our play.
We're going to do a little housekeeping now, Vaughn. I want to tell the audience that beginning Monday, June the 4th, we're moving this show to 7 p.m. rather than 8 p.m.
Great. Moving up an hour.
Moving on up. Yep. And the reason for that is quite exciting. And I want everyone to hear us say this. We are expanding. We're growing faster than we ever dreamed we would grow. And so what we're doing is we're adding on hours. We've got a fellow coming along who's going to do at least one show a week and maybe 2 one-hour shows that is going to be about Agenda 21 and education on Agenda 21, exactly what Agenda 21 is and how Agenda 21, a United Nations mandate on the United States of America, a direct challenge to the sovereignty of this country to try to draw us into a world government, is creeping into your local government in the way of food codes, in the way of sustainable development projects. And so we need to get some education out there on that and get some eyes open. So we're really excited about the fact that we'll be doing that at least one night a week. And so as we grow, we're thinking about some sort of if we can find a liberal who can actually talk intelligently, we're going to maybe think about doing a point counterpoint hour. And we've got some other good ideas, but what I'm saying is that as this grows, we're going to be adding a second hour some nights. And so we don't want to add a second hour onto the end of an 8 to 9 show where we drag on to 10 o'clock at night, would be 11 o'clock at night for our East Coast listeners. So, we do have listeners from as far away as Tennessee right now. That's the farthest away we have a listener, but so we don't want to drag. So we're going to move up to 7, and that way, as we add things on, we'll go from 7 to 9 on even our longest shows instead of from 8 to 10.
I think you got listeners even in Virginia.
Good,
actually.
Good. Yeah.
So.
Well,
I think that Agenda 21 is important to understand. The problem that I think most people have faced is that it is such a convoluted thing, and they don't really see it. You never see it coming, truthfully, until the lawsuits start happening. I know that I periodically read cases where people who've been caught up in the sustainable development zoning, the plans, the county commission plans, the regional development plans, that's really, I think, where people start to feel the effects of Agenda 21 items in those regional development plans and those county commission plans and those city plans. And truthfully, you never see it come until it slaps you smack dab in the back,
right?
The impact of those ordinances. So maybe this new caller or this new speaker will be able to give some real life examples so that people understand what the big deal is about.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, just to amplify what you're talking about here and how covert they want this to be. When Agenda 21 first became in vogue, when sustainable development first became in vogue, you can't count on two hands the number of TV commercials you suddenly saw. Walmart, Target, all of these commercials that use the word sustainable in them. And then all of a sudden, those commercials disappeared because someone said, because people were catching on, this is part of the sustainable development. This is part of Agenda 21. And the word was creeping out on Facebook pages and on newspaper editorials. And the word was creeping out that, hey, this sustainable development thing is not really a good thing. And suddenly you don't hear a commercial at all nowadays with the word sustainable in it.
I remember reading somewhere, I think it was some council of municipal city administrators, some newsletter or something, where they put out an article trying to counteract the growing negative sentiment around Agenda 21, and they gave them a whole new list of words to use instead of sustainable development,
right,
and how to attack people who were raising their voices against Agenda 21. A lot of folks think it's a conspiracy. It's just so hard to understand. It's so hard to explain. So we need to bring it down to real-world examples. So I'm looking forward to listening in on that show to see how this gentleman, this new host, is able to break it down for the regular person. Because
me too.
I think
me
that's
too.
Where we lose people.
Me too. And just to give you an idea of how people aren't getting this, we have had three nights now of our candidate forum where we talked to candidates, two nights, I'm sorry. We talked on Monday night to Gary Romine and Terry Varner. And we talked last night to Representative Mike McGee. Senator David Pierce refused to come along.
Was he scared?
I don't know. I might be stretching it to say he refused to come along. He didn't even give us the courtesy of replying to our invitation. So
maybe he was scared.
So anyway,
I'd hate to think he was just rude.
Yeah, yeah.
And not willing to listen to potential voters. That nobody would do that now, would they?
Oh, no. Nobody in those interviews but Varner had a clue what Agenda 21 was. And they didn't try to cover it up. I mean, they said, I don't know a thing about that. Both Romine and McGee said I don't know about it, so I can't address that. And I admire that. I admire a politician who'll say I don't know the answer, but it's kind of scary.
How's he going to respond to conservatives who are worried about upcoming elections when this is certainly on the conservative radar?
It certainly is. It certainly is. So
that bothers me.
Basically, the why we're moving to 7 o'clock, I think it'll be a more comfortable hour for everyone anyway.
I think so.
Yeah. You talked a little bit.
And we hope that – go ahead. I'm sorry. I'll just
that
candidates like Romine will actually listen so that they will have a clue.
Yes,
when
yes.
someone else asks them.
Absolutely. I understand that Gary did go Tuesday night after that Monday night interview to the up there in your part of the country, you had an Agenda 21 forum where they actually,
in Farmington, yes,
in Farmington, where they actually spent some time with some people educating about what Agenda 21 is. We were advertising that quite heavily. I think it was pushed pretty heavily in the Farmington area. A little bit disappointing that only 50 people came, but okay,
50 people, 50 votes.
50, that's right. Listen, listeners, it's 347-677-1835 to be on the show. 347-677-1835. Call in on anything we're talking about here. Voice your opinion. We're kind of free speechy. So, I mean, if you want to argue with us about something, we'll give you a couple of minutes to do that. Vaughn,
right. We're not just free speech on Friday. We're free speech every night.
That's absolutely right. You talked a little bit in your show on Tuesday. Great show. Talking with
Nick Brooks.
Yeah, Nick Brooks. Nick Brooks from the Veterans. Veterans with Hope. Great show. But you led off the show by talking a little bit about Memorial Day. And
oh yeah.
you reminded us all that, that this is a little bit more than just a 3-day. What are you doing for the weekend, Vaughn?
Me? I am going to stay home, stay close, maybe make some wreaths for my aunt to put on some graves, and just stay close to friends and family.
Good.
I don't have any major plans. I'm actually overbooked, my husband would say, because I like to socialize, but I'm going to tone it down a little bit so that we can both catch our breath.
Good. Good. Yeah, I'm going to kind of rest. Well, Saturday, my brother's coming over. We're having a little cook, but that's not a Memorial Day thing. He and his wife come over once a month just so we can stay close, and we cook and eat and just sit around and visit for a while. And then on Sunday, all of the kids are coming over. We'll have a house and a yard full, and that's again isn't specifically Memorial Day. We do that once a month all through the summer, where all the kids come over one day and we barbecue and spend the day together. But it does turn out that the first one of the summer is Memorial Day and the last one is Labor Day. So we're going to do that Saturday and Sunday, and then Monday. Monday I'm gonna just take it easy and rest and remember what Memorial Day is all about. And that, Vaughn, as you pointed out to us quite succinctly, is a day when we remember. Now, some people get this wrong. They think it's a day when we thank the veterans. And we have a day for that. It's called Veterans Day. This is the day when we specifically remember those who gave it all for freedom. I'm a veteran. Everybody knows that. I was in for 25 years, and this isn't my day. I have a day in November the 11th, and I hold up my chest and I go to the Veterans Day parade and I let everybody know that I'm proud of what I did. But this is not my day. This is the day for people that were not as lucky as me, who gave everything.
The ultimate sacrifice.
That's right. And we remember them. And you know what I do on Memorial Day morning every year, because I'm anal like this. I drive around town. And I stop at businesses and government buildings, surprisingly, police stations, fire stations, and I remind people who aren't doing so the appropriate way to display the flag on Veterans Day. And it's very meaningful to me, because you start the day, if you folks don't know, you start the day at sunrise with your flag at half staff as a memory. And a remembrance to those that the day is for, those that gave their life in the defense of freedom. And then at noon, as a symbol of the fact that beyond their sacrifice and because of their sacrifice, America lives, you raise your flag at noon to the top of the mast. I'm telling you, there are lots of people who display flags, lots and lots, who don't know that. And that is, I think, probably one of the most touching symbolisms that we do on a holiday. I mean, on Veterans Day, we fly the flag half-staff. At other times, we fly the flag half-staff. But that half-staff in the morning to full up in the evening to symbolize the price these people paid for our freedom, and then to top that off with the symbolism of the long life of a strong nation because of them, I think that is absolutely touching to me, and I like to make sure people understand that that's the way we do it on Memorial Day.
Now, you know, for me, it's a little bit different. For me, I'm always touched by the way the living don't forget the dead. You know, you see these guys at cemeteries all over the country. They're forming caps. They're paying tribute. They're saluting their dead brothers, their dead comrades. And it's wonderful when you see them on Veterans Day. They're so proud. They're wearing their uniforms. They're saluting each other, they're paying tribute, and they're accepting the thanks of the nation. But it's even more, to me, touching to see them. They never forget the ones who didn't come home the way they did.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. And for those who were there, and did come home, the sacrifice of those who didn't is even more acutely felt than for just the average Joe walking down the street who enjoys the freedom that they paid for.
Oh, yeah. Nick Brooks talked about the guilt that the living veterans feel. And it's part of the thing that eats them up inside and why they suffer so much when they do come home.
Yep. So that's Memorial Day, folks. That's what it's all about. And it is more than just a 3-day weekend. We love the barbecue. We love the lake. We love the boats. We love the skis. We love the things.
And the air show.
Yeah, love an air show. Love a good air show. And we should. Those are the things that these soldiers bought us. Those are the things that they paid for, and we should enjoy them to the max. And then we should remember. We should remember the price they paid so that we can do those things. And by all means, if you not just on Memorial Day, but if you are in a position where you are responsible for the display of a flag, no flag etiquette inside and out, because it tears me up to drive down the street and see a flag that should have been replaced 6 months ago flying in front of a fire station or a government building. I mean, it's absolutely clear when a flag needs to be replaced.
So you get bent when you see a flag that's been made into a pair of shorts or a purse, too, don't you?
You know, and Lisa and I talked about that last night when we were talking about some of these bad bills, some of these censorship bills. I do. It turns my stomach. But by the same token, I'm a libertarian, so I am 100% opposed to any law that says you can't do that. You know, these people that I know who died for the United States of America, they died for freedom. They didn't die for a flag. So it turns my stomach and really even makes me angry, sometimes maybe fighting mad, when someone pickets a military funeral contending that the guy that's being lowered into the ground is being lowered as a penalty from God for what we've done.
I thought I'd get through a month without hearing about those jackasses.
But I never, ever, ever, ever want to pass a law that says they can't do that. I never want to pass a law.
You feel the same way about flag burning?
I absolutely do. I never want to pass a law that says that, you know, my wife and I, we've been married for a long, long time. I'm not going to say how long, but if she gets mad at me one day, because I didn't bring bread home from the store, and in a fit of rage, takes off her wedding ring and throws it under the lawnmower and it gets destroyed, that's not the end of our marriage, because that ring is nothing but a symbol of what we have. And what we have will survive me not bringing bread home from the store and her getting in a rage, and even getting in a rage to the point where she destroys all of the symbols of what we have.
I have to say, as a domestic attorney, I'd be a little worried if she did that over bread.
Well,
chocolate. Yeah. Now, let's talk. I'm sure that there are plenty of sympathetic listeners there, but, you know, Bunny Bread, Wonder Bread.
Yeah.
Not even the good stuff, the Sara Lee whole grain, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. But the point is, you know, the flag is a symbol, is nothing more. I love the flag. I love the flag. I love the Pledge of Allegiance. I love the taps. I love the flag etiquette. I love a nice looking flag. I love it all. But it is a symbol of what this country is about. And when we destroy the freedom to burn that flag, if you so desire, to trash it, we destroy the very thing that flag symbolizes, in my opinion.
I would tend to agree with you. I don't like to see people burn the flag, but if they feel so strongly about it, about whatever it is that's bothering them, that burning a flag is the strongest means they have of drawing attention to their message, then I feel like I need to listen to the message that they have, just so that I can... just so I can understand and not give in to the urge to pop somebody for burning a flag. So yep. I like to think ideally that people don't do it just to stunt, that they're doing it because they have a message and this is how they can get your attention because they have no other way of doing it.
Right. I agree. I tell you what, Vaughn, we're going to take a break here because I need to take a sip of my tea. I've been talking too much. I need to let you talk more. And when we come back, we're going to you and I are going to recap just one or two things, maybe mine and your favorite bills and least favorite bills from the session that just ended. We're going to recap the session real quick, and we'll do that when we come back in about a minute and 15 seconds.
Okay.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
To be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Okay, Vaughn, we're back.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. And you know, the 2012 legislative session is wrapped up, and like any other set, well, unlike several of the past sessions, they did get enough done in the last week to avoid, I believe, a special session for a change. They did get the budget finished, which was their biggie. In fact, I read a article written by a congressman who said, you know, our only constitutional responsibility is to pass a budget, so let's get on the ball here.
Yes, the one thing that we expect you to do, come on, can you handle that little?
Well, they can, but not until the last 3 days of the session.
Yeah, that's where they sneak in a bunch of stuff that they tell us that they would never vote for.
That's right. Yeah, so, that's right. So what we're going to do is you're welcome to do the same with yours, but I'm going to tell everyone what my least favorite bill was and what my favorite bill was. My biggest disappointment, of course, was, and I've made no secret of this, was the failure by the Senate to act on the nullification. This was a bill that 71% of the of Missourians said to the Congress, do this thing, and it was pre-filed, which means that it was sitting on the table, ready to be taken up the first day of work. The House of Representatives did the right thing with it and got it over to the Senate. The Senate fast-tracked it through a committee and sent it out of committee, recommended due pass, and it just kept getting tabled by the Senate leadership and finally just died on the table without ever having a debate or a vote. And that's incredibly disappointing to me. That ought to get the Senate replaced, I mean, in my opinion.
Oh, you know, stop dreaming, Dave. Put the tea down. It's
no,
not
I said
helping
it,
you.
I said it ought to. I didn't say it would.
It ought to. I don't know why you go into these things with your hopes so high. You got to lower the bar. Dave, don't just lower the bar. Dig a trench under that puppy and drop it another 12 feet. Then and only then will you feel good about Missouri's legislature coming out of session with anything useful.
Well, you know, the worst bill, and I'll tell you what, I didn't run across this bill until I was doing some research on one of the interviews that we're getting ready to do, but do you know that they passed a bill this session that says if you and I and the five other members of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Executive Committee, seven of us, if we all went out and we put our money together and we bought 100 acres and we each built a house on that 100 acres, we built a nice little circle road so that each of us had access from our gated community to the highway. And then any mm-hmm. one of us, if any one of us complains to the state that road, that private road of ours, is not being maintained properly by the other people, the state will come in, take over the maintenance of that road, that private road, and send us all a bill.
Yeah. Hey, they don't know anything about how the Constitution and property rights are supposed to work. I think what the Kansas City Star said, this will be remembered in Missouri as the year the legislature didn't even try.
Yeah, I agree. Lisa knows the number, and she threw it out there last night. But what is it, like 2,400 bills or something that sailed through there this year, or just came out or didn't come out? But they wrote more than 2,000 bills in, what are they there for, two and three quarter months?
Yeah, I remember clearly, and this is, I almost hate to always be picking on Angler, but it's so easy, but I remember Lisa, it's terrible, I'm going to have to save a child from a house fire to balance this out, but I remember Lisa Black, who unfortunately was injured recently in a horse riding accident, she was at a session with Missouri Landlords with Kevin Angler. And Angler at that time had a bill that I think is absolutely ridiculous, is tacking on this criminal penalties for people who don't pay their rent and don't get out when they've been evicted.
Oh, yeah.
And not going to help anybody. It's just pure political pandering. And truthfully, anyone who's ever been the victim of a crime knows that this thing is not going to do a thing for them but frustrate them. But his bill sailed through both houses. It was blazing through both houses. And as I'm watching and reading the Capitol report that he puts out boasting about this progress, I remember Lisa Black talking at the same meeting that he attended about how very carefully Congress people and elected officials in the House, in the Missouri House and Missouri Senate, review bills, because they don't want anything going out there that's unconstitutional. And at that time, Angler had convinced this room full of landlords that a tenant who doesn't pay his bills is going to get evicted, and if he doesn't vacate the home within 10 days of being evicted by court order, on that 11th day, all of a sudden he's going to wake up. He's a criminal. He's a convicted criminal. Due process, be damned. And I remember him saying that and boasting about it, just like felony child support, Vaughn, just like felony child support, right? Wrong.
Yep.
And I remember Lisa Black saying that, no, sometimes it takes years for a bill to make its way through both houses because they're so careful about it. And this bill couldn't pass constitutional muster if any competent judge had listened to Mr. Angler explain it to those landlords. I think they would have been appalled. But, you know, it's out there, and so I guess it's a crime now, and it's a pointless crime because nobody's going to jail off it, and nobody's going to pay a fine, and the landlord's not going to get a thing except more time in court.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you want to talk about a crime. You want to talk about something that ought to be criminal. It's the way these things get done. This private roads bill. Now,
yes.
nobody in his right mind who expects to ever be elected to a public office again for the rest of his life would wake up one morning and say, I think I'd ought to write a bill that takes away people's property rights and turns private property over to the state where the state can send a bill to people. So what they
and
do
you
is...
you know, when the state sends a bill, that bill is going to be hideous.
It is. It is, because they can't do anything efficiently. But so
right.
So when this guy wants to pass this bill for his friend somewhere, what he does is he doesn't ever write a bill. So you never write a bill. You just wake up one morning and you say, this is what I want to do. And so this bill for, say, the Highway Patrol funding or for the Department of Transportation reassignment, goes and it goes into committee and it gets debated and it gets amended and it gets substituted and it goes to the House and it gets voted on and it goes to the Senate and it gets substituted and it gets amended and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And finally, this bill is ready to go. And 3 days before the end of the session, some guy pops up and says, oh, I have an amendment. Amendment 4 for this bill is going to do this to these roads. Now, this has never been, it's never been to a committee. It's never had a public hearing. It's never been posted as part of this law. It's never been online. And suddenly you wake up one day and this bill has passed and you go and read it the next day and voila, here's this amendment in it.
Yeah. And this is the new non-legislative process.
It's absolutely
the way business is done.
Yep. It sure is.
I remember Cynthia Davis coming to Farmington and giving a talk, and she's running for lieutenant governor.
She is, yes. Constitution Party. Yes, she is. Good
yes.
woman.
And
a little bit goofy sometimes, but she sure is a good lady.
And there's nothing wrong with being a little bit goofy. My mother said so. Now, Cynthia Davis said something that was actually, it was so funny, but it was so pathetically sad. She talked about how legislators don't even read these. They're all read by lobbyists, and when the votes are called up, there are guys you can see. They look up in the lobby up on the balcony, and there are lobbyists up there with thumbs up or thumbs down.
Yeah.
So that they know how to vote.
Absolutely.
And that's lazy.
It sure is.
It's shamefully lazy. And I'd like to see pictures. I'd like to have video of these guys checking. It makes them look like pets.
Yep. It just amazes me every time. I know they're busy. I know it's a busy place. Jefferson City, both sides of that rotunda, they're busy, busy, busy. And they're running around for 2 3/4 months. But every time that I get ready to do an interview on the radio with one of these guys that's been working Jeff City, they want to know what we're going to talk about. And I always tell them what the questions are going to be because we never want to be a gotcha kind of show. But
right.
They say, well, tell me specifically the bills you're going to ask me about. And listen, they come right out and say, so I can go look up my voting record on that bill. Well,
right.
A, if they have to go look up their voting record on any specific bill, they looked at too damn many bills. And
yeah.
B, if they have to go look up their voting record on any specific bill, they didn't even read the bill before they voted on it.
Probably, likely. I mean, the truth is they're not even writing them. And if they're writing them, then you're going to get something as poor as what Engler puts out on a regular basis.
That's right. That's right. We touched on this last night in the show, Vaughn, and what Lisa and I were talking about is, in my mind, and you know, I'm libertarian. I have as much disdain for Republicans as I do for Democrats. In my mm-hmm. mind, the number one test that every lawmaker ought to have to pass before he even considers a bill, the number one hurdle that ought to be jumped is every liberty belongs to the people, and no law is a good law because recognizing that every law written deprives someone of some level of liberty. So,
there you go again.
No law.
How about we just settle for them reading it and understanding what it says? I'd settle for that.
Well, I wouldn't. I won't, because no law is a good law unless the amount of my liberty that is being impeded weighs against what it's doing to protect you from my liberty. In other
there
words,
you go having expectations. Dave, stop it. Stop with the hope and all of that stuff. You're just going to hurt yourself.
Hope and change. Isn't that it?
Yeah,
hope and change? Yeah.
Yeah. Unchanging hopelessness. Look, I think that the only way we're going to even come close to any sort of constitutional, libertarian, conservative ideal is if we recognize that there is no functional difference between the Democratic and Republican parties. When you take a look at what's been done from year to year, regardless of which party is in power, you'll find that more likely than not, they would have done the same thing regardless of which one was running the game.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. I couldn't agree with you more. Okay.
And so you have no choice of change unless you put in real conservatives.
We got 10 minutes left here, Vaughn. So, man, we've wasted an hour here tonight. I thought we'd get a lot more done, but we've had some good talk.
Well, you wasted 30 minutes on hope.
Hope and change. That's right. Well, Vaughn, you know, I'll tell you, I have to hand you this. You know, you have this on me. Pessimists are never disappointed.
That's right. And that's when, so therefore, when something good happens, anything at all, I can live off that for days.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, we talked about Monday, the 4th, when we're going to change the time of this show from 8 o'clock every night to 7 o'clock every night. Now, the tough thing about that, Vaughn, is that's what time home games start. So I want everyone to understand that I'm making a huge sacrifice here because I'm missing a lot of Cardinal games.
Okay, let's have a minute of silence for Dave.
Okay,
I feel refreshed.
Okay, folks, you got 9 minutes. If you call 347-677-1835, we'll give you 1.5 minutes of our 9 minutes. Okay, Vaughn, let's talk about what's on tap. Missouri Grassroots Radio, we have a fairly established format at this time. We're getting ready to expand it. But on Monday and Thursday, we have the Hour of Truth, and Lisa calls it Stretching the Truth because we've actually stretched the Hour of Truth to an hour and a half. So that we could get this done. But what we're doing on the Hour of Truth, Monday and Thursday, is we are vetting every race in the state of Missouri where there is a Republican primary. So we've done
Coming up next?
Coming up next is Emerson Parker. Monday night.
Is Emerson coming? Is Emerson
We have not heard from Emerson yet, but we'll have 45 minutes. We'll have 45 minutes.
You will not hear from her.
Probably not, but we'll have 45 minutes of the 90-minute show dedicated to Joanne Emerson, and if she'd like to have something to say about what we have to say, it would behoove her to come along, don't you think?
I think that she's settled into this pattern of pretending you don't exist until the Republican primary is over and then coming out with, you know, arms wide open, words of love, ready to gently hold you as you cry because she's going to get elected again.
I don't think she is. Let's wait.
I think Bob Parker's got a great shot. I mean, what, he took 35% of the primary vote the last round and what did he spend, $25,000?
Yeah, absolutely.
Bob Parker gets $5 from, you know, a few hundred more people, and he's got this in the bag.
And Joanne's got huge negatives this time she didn't have last time. I mean, huger negatives this time than she had last time. It's gone.
I think they stand out more this year.
They do. It's gone very badly for her. So anyway, that's what we're doing on Monday. Thursday, we are doing Missouri 32. And I forget who that is, but we're doing Missouri 32. If you're out there,
what's
from
that?
Missouri Senate District 32, we'll be doing your Republican primary on Thursday night.
Okay. Don't say Missouri 32 around me. I'm instantly thinking of that road that goes through Farmington.
Oh yeah, no, Missouri Senate District 32. 347-677-1835. Then Tuesdays is Vaughn, our favorite Vaughn character. What do you do on Tuesdays, Vaughn?
Tuesdays we do a little show called Show Me Common Sense. And last week we talked with Nick Brooks of Veterans with Hope. This week I'm changing it up a little bit. We touch on issues that affect Missourians directly. We've got Bill Simmons coming on. Bill is a friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. He's a guy who's gone through some horrific things in his lifetime. He and his siblings, victims of abuse, just dozens of foster homes. And he came out of the tunnel, not only survived, but thrived. And he's got some great stories to tell us. And we're going to touch on some of the issues legally that affect foster children and parents who've lost their kids to the system and the things that are going on in the juvenile system today. And we're going to touch on his experiences as well. It's going to be pretty awesome. He's one of those people you can just listen to. He's awesome.
Is he a grassroots conservative?
He is a grassroots conservative.
You know,
actually, it's really hard not to be when you've gone through what he's gone through, and the that one event in his life that he can't, his foster father can't even remember, but the event in his life that changed him forever.
You know, I think I disagree with you. I don't think it's easy to be a grassroots conservative when you come out of that background, because when you've been in the juvenile system, when you've been in the foster system, you are in a system that is indoctrinated with a need to be dependent on the government. And when you grow up with that, I think it is extremely admirable that you can come out of that recognizing that that's not the way to live.
Oh, I'm going to disagree with you there, Dave. My experience, if you're not a social worker, if you're not someone who has a job in the system, in other words, if you're the family whose lives have been torn apart, if you're the children who are stuck in the system, I tend to think that you come out with a healthy disdain for liberal politics, and you have greater awareness of the refusal of influential members of the system to recognize your rights as a parent and as a human being.
Well, you know, there's something to that. I never thought of that. I think maybe you're right.
It depends on which end of the horse you're at, to be honest.
Wednesday nights, Lisa Payne Nagler comes along.
Culture
with
Vigilante.
Culture Vigilante. And she talks about the conservative culture. You know, there's a lot more to being conservative than just politics. There's a whole culture that makes us politically what we are. I mean, it is the culture that we believe should be the American culture that makes us politically what we are. It's not.
Can
it's
I tell
not,
you?
Sure.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to tell you a quick story about that.
Please.
Touching on that. I was on the West Coast with my husband, and we were talking with a young lady at dinner, one of those frou-frou restaurants where the food is all very artfully prepared and it could go on television right that second. And she was asking us how difficult it was to live in Missouri with all those hillbillies. And it was funny because she didn't recognize until later that she was actually one of those people who loved her family, loved her work, followed the law, paid her taxes, took care of kids, went to church. In other words, she was a hillbilly.
She was a hillbilly too. Yeah, there you go.
She didn't realize it till we talked some more. She was a straight up hillbilly, and she had no idea.
Yeah, Lisa on Culture Vigilante talks about a lot of things that have to do with the culture, but Lisa is really, really into education and how education in the state of Missouri is being totally destroyed, and that destruction, she'll point out to you in no uncertain terms, continued right on into this last session with the expansion of the charter schools, the core is now part of not only the K-12, but has moved into secondary schools, 2 and 4 year universities. So the Common Core. So she talks almost every Wednesday night. She has at least a segment of Culture Vigilante on education and specifically sometimes on homeschooling. Lisa's a homeschooling mom, and she knows everything there is to know about education, homeschooling, and the culture.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, and then on Friday, of course, we'll have the roundtable. Next week at the roundtable, we'll have Lisa, who's at the Randall Spence Forum tonight, and Mike Smith will come along, who is at the Aiken Steelman Bruner debate tonight, and we'll talk to them about their impressions. So that's a wrap pretty much for tonight, Vaughn. It's been good. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed this.
I've enjoyed it too. Thanks for letting me come on.
We'll talk to you on Tuesday night, and again next week at the roundtable discussion.
All right. Take care.
Good night, Vaughn. Good night, listeners. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.